This is Audible.
Audible Frontiers presents Dreams of Steel, written by Glenn Cook and narrated by Rachel Butera.
Chapter 1. Many months have passed. Much has happened and much has slipped from my memory. Insignificant details have stuck with me while important things have gotten away. Some things I know only from third parties, and more I can only guess. How often have my witnesses perjured themselves? It did not occur to me, till this time of enforced inactivity befell me, that an important tradition was being overlooked, that no one was recording the deeds of the Black Company. I dithered then. It seemed a presumption for me to take up the pen. I have no training. I am no historian, nor even much of a writer. Certainly I don't have Croker's eye or ear or wit. So I shall confine myself to reporting facts as I recall them. I hope the tale is not too much colored by my own presence within it, nor by what it has done to me. With that apologia, herewith, this addition to the annals of the Black Company, in the tradition of annalists before me, the Book of Lady. Lady, Annalist, Captain. Chapter 2. The elevation was not good. The distance was extreme. But Willow Swan knew what he was seeing.
"They're getting their butts kicked."
Armies contended before the city Dejagore, at the center of a circular, hill-encompassed plain. Swan and three companions watched. Blade grunted agreement. Cordy Mather, Swan's oldest friend, said nothing. He just tried to kick the stuffing out of a rock. The army they favored was losing. Swan and Mather were whites, blonde and brunette, hailing from Roses, a city 7,000 miles north of the Killing Ground. Blade was a black giant of uncertain origins, a dangerous man with little to say. Swan and Mather had rescued him from crocodiles a few years earlier. He had stuck. The three were a team. Swan cursed softly, steadily, as the battle situation worsened. The fourth man did not belong. The team would not have had him if he volunteered. People called him Smoke. Officially, he was the fire marshal of Taglios, the city-nation whose army was losing. In reality, he was the Taglian court wizard. He was a nut-brown little man whose very existence annoyed Swan.
"That's your army out there, Smoke," Willow growled. "It goes down, you go down. Bet the Shadow Masters would love to lay hands on you."
Sorceries yowled and barked on the battlefield.
"Maybe make marmalade out of you, unless you've cut a deal already."
"Ease up, Willow," Mather said. "He's doing something."
Swan looked at the butternut-colored runt.
"Sure enough, but what?"
Smoke had his eyes closed. He mumbled and muttered. Sometimes his voice crackled and sizzled like bacon in an overheated pan.
"He ain't doing nothing to help the Black Company. You quit talking to yourself, you old buzzard. We got a problem. Our guys are getting whipped. You want to try to turn that around before I turn you over my knee?"
The old man opened his eyes. He stared across the plain. His expression was not pleasant. Swan doubted that the little geek's eyes were good enough to make out details, but you never knew with Smoke. With him, everything was mask and pretense.
"Don't be a moron, Swan. I'm one man, too little and too old. There are Shadow Masters down there. They can stomp me like a roach."
Swan fussed and grumbled. People he knew were dying.
Smoke snapped. "All I can do, all any of us can do, is attract attention. Do you really want the Shadow Masters to notice you?"
"They're just the Black Company, eh? They took their pay, they take their chances, even if 40,000 Taglians go down with them?"
Smoke's lips shrank into a mean little prune. On the plain, a human tide washed around a mound where the Black Company standard had been planted for a last stand. The tide swept on toward the hills.
You wouldn't be happy about the way things are going, would you?
Swan's voice was dangerous, no longer carping. Smoke was a political animal, worse than a crocodile. Crocs might eat their young, but their treacheries were predictable. Though irked, Smoke replied in a voice almost tender.
They have accomplished more than we dreamed.
The plain was dense with the dead and dying, man and beast. Mad war elephants careened around, respecting no allegiance. Only one Taglian legion had maintained its integrity. It had fought its way to a city gate and was covering the flight of other Taglians. Flames rose beyond the city from a military encampment. The company had scored that much success against the apparent victors. Smoke said,
"They've lost a battle, but they saved Taglios. They slew one of the Shadow Masters. They've made it impossible for the others to attack Taglios. Those will spend their remaining troops recapturing Deja Gore."
Swan sneered. "Just pardon me if I don't dance for joy. I liked those guys. I didn't like the way you planned to shaft them."
Smoke's temper was strained.
"They weren't fighting for Taglios, Swan. They wanted to use us to hammer through the Shadowlands to Katavar. Which could be worse than a Shadowmaster's conquest?"
Swan knew rationalization when he stepped in it.
"And because they wouldn't lick your boots, even if they were willing to save your asses from the Shadow Masters, you figure it's handy, them getting caught here. A pity, say I. Would have been some swell show, watching your footwork if they'd come up winners and you had to deliver your end of the bargain."
"Ease up, Willow," Mather said.
Swan ignored him.
"Call me a cynic, Smoke, but I'd bet about anything you and the Radisha had it scoped out to screw them from the start, eh?
Wouldn't do to have them slice through the Shadowlands, but why the hell not? I never did get that part."
"It ain't over yet, Swan,"
Blade said.
"Wait, Smoke going to get his turn to cry."
The others gawked at Blade. He spoke so seldom that when he did, they knew it meant something. What did he know? Swan asked.
"You see something I missed?"
Cordy snapped. "Damn it, will you calm down?"
"Why the hell should I? The whole damn world is swamped by conniving old farts like Smoke. They've been screwing the rest of us since the gods started keeping time. Look at this little poof. Keeps whining about how he's got to lay low and not let the Shadow Masters find out about him. I think that means he's got no balls. That lady? You know who she used to be. She had balls enough to face them. You give that half a think, you'll realize how she laid more on the line than this old freak ever could."
"Calm down, Willow."
"Calm down, hell. It ain't right. Somebody's gotta tell old farts like this to go suck rocks."
Blade grunted agreement, but Blade didn't like anyone in authority. Swan, not as upset as he put on, noted that Blade was in a position to whack the wizard if he got obnoxious. Smoke smiled.
"Swan, once upon a time, all us old farts were young loudmouths like you."
Mather stepped between them.
"Enough! Instead of squabbling, how about we get out of here before that mess catches up with us?"
Remnants of the battle swirled around the toes of the foothills.
"We can gather the garrisons from the towns north of here and collect everybody at Goja."
Swan agreed, sourly.
"Yeah, maybe some of the company made it."
He glowered at Smoke.
The old man shrugged. "If some get out, they can train a real army. They'd have time enough now."
"Yeah, and if the Prabhrindra Dra and the Radisha was to get off their butts, they might even line up a few real allies. Maybe come up with a wizard with a hair on his ass. One who wouldn't spend his whole life hiding out in the weeds."
Mather started down the back of the hill.
"Come on, Blade, let them bicker."
After several seconds, Smoke confessed.
"He's right, Swan. Let's get on with it."
Willow tossed his long golden hair, looked at Blade. Blade jerked his head toward the horses below the hill.
"All right."
Swan took a last look at the city and plain where the Black Company had died.
"But what's right is right, and what's wrong is wrong."
"And what's practical is practical, and what's needful is necessary. Let's go."
Swan walked. He would remember that remark. He was determined to have the last word.
"Bullshit, Smoke. That's bullshit. I seen a new side of you today. I don't like it, and I don't trust it. I'm going to watch you like your conscience."
They mounted up and headed north. Chapter 3. In those days, the company was in service to the Prabhrindra Dra of Taglios. That prince was too easygoing to master a numerous, factious people like the Taglians. But his natural optimism and forgiving nature were offset by his sister, the Radisha Dra. A small, dark, hard woman, the Radisha had a will of sword steel and the conscience of a hurtling stone. While the Black Company and the Shadow Masters contested possession of Dejagore, or Stormguard, the Prabhrindra Dra held an audience 300 miles to the north. The prince stood 5.5 feet tall. Though dark, his features were Caucasic. He glowered at the priests and engineers before him. He wanted to throw them out. But in god-ridden Taglios, no one offended the priesthoods. He spied his sister signaling from the shadowed rear of the chamber.
"Excuse me."
He walked out. Bad manners they would tolerate. He joined the Radisha.
"What is it?"
"Not here."
"Bad news?"
"Not now."
The Radisha strode off.
Majorindi looked unhappy.
"He got his hand caught in a monkey trap. He insisted we build a wall because Shaza has been having holy visions. But once the others demanded a share, he sang a different song. I asked if Shaza had begun having unvisions. He wasn't amused."
"Good."
The Radisha led her brother through tortuous passages. The palace was ancient. Additions were cobbled on during every rain. No one knew the labyrinth whole except Smoke. The Radisha went to one of the wizard's secret places, a room sheltered from eavesdroppers by the old man's finest spells. The Prabhrindra Dra shut the door.
"Well?" "A pigeon brought a message from Smoke."
"Bad news?"
"Our mercenaries have been defeated at Stormguard."
The Shadow Masters called Dejagore Stormguard.
"Badly?"
"Is there any other—"
"Yes."
Before the appearance of the Shadow Masters, Taglios had been a pacifist state. But when that danger first beckoned, the Prabhrindra had exhumed the ancient Strategikans.
"Were they annihilated? Routed? How badly did they hurt the Shadow Masters? Is Taglios in danger?"
"They shouldn't have crossed the main."
"They had to harry the survivors from Goja Ford. They're the professionals, sis. We said we wouldn't second-guess or interfere. We didn't believe they could win at Goja, so we're way ahead. Give me details."
"A pigeon isn't a condor."
The Radisha made a face.
"They marched down with a mob of liberated slaves, took Dejagore by stealth, destroyed Storm Shadow and wounded Shadow Spinner. But today Moonshadow appeared with a fresh army. Casualties were heavy on both sides. Moonshadow may have been killed, but we lost. Some of the troops retreated into the city, the rest scattered. Most of the mercenaries, including the captain and his woman, were killed."
"Lady is dead? That's a pity. She was exquisite."
"You're a lustful ape."
"I am, aren't I? But she did stop hearts wherever she went."
"Anne never noticed. The only man she saw was her captain, that Croaker character."
"Are you miffed because he only had eyes for her?"
She gave him a savage look.
"What's Smoke doing?"
"Fleeing north. Blade, Swan, and Mather will try to rally the survivors at Goja."
"I don't like that. Smoke should have stayed down there, rallied them there, to support the men in the city. You don't give away ground you've gained."
"Smoke is scared the Shadow Masters will find out about him."
"They don't know? That would surprise me."
The Prabhrindra shrugged.
"What's he saving himself for? I'm going down there."
She laughed.
"What?"
"You can't. Those idiot priests would steal everything but your eyes. Stay. Keep them occupied with their idiot wall. I'll go, and I'll kick Smoke's butt till he gets off it and does something."
The prince sighed.
"You're right, but go quietly. They behave better when they think you're watching."
"They didn't miss me last time."
"Don't leave me twisting in the wind. They're hard to deal with when they know more than I do."
"I'll keep them off balance."
She patted his arm.
"Go shock them with your turnaround. Work them into a wall-building frenzy. Get benevolent toward whichever cult shows the most productivity. Get them cutting each other's throats."
The Prabhrindra grinned boyishly. That was the game he loved. That was the way to accumulate power. Get the priests to disarm themselves. Chapter 4. It was a bizarre little parade. At its head was a black thing that could not decide if it was a tree stump or someone weirdly built carrying a box under one arm. Behind that, a man floated a yard off the ground, feet foremost, inelegantly sprawled. An arrow had pierced his chest. It still protruded from his back. He was alive, but barely. Behind the floating man was another with a lance through him. He drifted a dozen feet up, alive and in pain, sometimes writhing like an animal with a broken spine. Two riderless horses followed him, both black stallions, bigger than any war charger. Crows by the hundreds circled above, coming and going like scouts. The parade climbed the hills east of Stormguard, moving in twilight. Once it paused, remained motionless 20 minutes while a scatter of Taglian fugitives passed. They saw nothing. There was magic at work there. The column continued moving by night. The crows continued flying, formed a rear guard, watched for something. Several times they cawed at shifting shadows, but settled down quickly. False alarms? The party halted 10 miles from the beleaguered city. The thing leading spent hours collecting brush and deadwood, piled it in a deep crack in a granitic hillside. Then it seized the floating lance, dragged its victim off, stripped him down. A bitter, remote, whispering voice exclaimed, "This isn't one of the Taken," when the man's mask came off. The crows became raucous. Discussing? Arguing? The leader asked, "Who are you? What are you? Where did you come from?" The injured man did not respond. Maybe he was beyond communication. Maybe he did not speak that language. Maybe he was stubborn. Torture produced no answers. The Inquisitor tossed the man into the woodpile, waved a hand. The pile burst into flame. The stump thing used the lance to keep its victim from escaping. The burning man had a bottomless well of energy. There was sorcery at work here. The burning man was the Shadow Master, Moonshadow. His army had triumphed outside Stormguard, but his own fortune had been inglorious. The party did not move on till the Shadow Master was consumed. The fire burned to ashes, and the ashes cooled. The stump thing gathered the ashes. As it traveled, it disposed of those pinch by pinch. The man with the arrow in him bobbed in the stump thing's wake. The stallions brought up the rear. The crows maintained their patrols. Once a large cat-like thing came too near, and they went into paroxysms. The stump did something mystical. The black leopard wandered away, absent of mind. Chapter 5. A slight figure in ornate black armor strained savagely. A corpse toppled off the heap of corpses piled upon the figure. The shift in weight made it possible to wriggle out of the heap. Free, the figure lay motionless for several minutes, panting inside a grotesque helmet. Then it pulled itself into a sitting position. After another minute, the figure struggled out of its gauntlets, revealed delicate hands. Slim fingers plucked at the fastenings holding its helmet. That came away, too. Long black hair fell free around a face to stun a man. Inside all that ugly black steel was a woman. "I have to report those moments that way because I don't recall them at all. I remember a dark dream, a nightmare featuring a black woman with fangs like a vampire, nothing else. My first clear recollection is of sitting beside the heap of corpses with my helmet in my lap. I was panting, only vaguely aware that I had gotten out of the pile somehow. The stench of 1,000 cruel gut wounds filled the air like the stink of the largest, rawest sewer in the world. It was the smell of battlefields. How many times had I smelled it? 1,000, and still I wasn't used to it. I gagged. Nothing came up. I had emptied my stomach into my helmet while I was under the pile. I had a vague recollection of being terrified that I would drown in my own vomit. I started shaking. Tears rolled, stinging hot tears of relief. I had survived. I had lived ages beyond the measure of most mortals, but I had lost none of my desire for life. As I caught my breath, I tried to put together where I was, what I was doing there, besides surviving. My last clear memories weren't pleasant. I remembered knowing that I was about to die. I couldn't see much in the dark, but I didn't need to see to know we had lost. Had the company turned the tide, Croker would have found me long ago. Why hadn't the victors? There were men moving on the battlefield. I heard low voices arguing, moving my way slowly. I had to get out of there. I got up, managed to stumble 4 steps before I fell on my face, too weak to move another inch. Thirst was a demon devouring me from the inside out. My throat was so dry I couldn't whine. I'd made noise. The looters were quiet now. They were sneaking toward me after one more victim. Where was my sword? I was going to die now. No weapon and no strength to use if I found one before they found me. I could see them now. 3 men backlighted by a faint glow from Deja Gore. Small men, like most of the Shadow Master soldiers. Neither strong nor particularly skilled, but in my case, they needed neither strength nor skill. Could I play dead? No. They wouldn't be deceived. Corpses would be cool now. Damn them! Before they killed me, they would do more than just rob me. They wouldn't kill me. They would recognize the armor. The Shadow Masters weren't fools. They knew who I'd been. They knew what I carried inside my head, treasures they dreamed about getting out. There would be rewards for my capture. Maybe there are gods. A racket broke out behind the looters. Sounded like a sally from Deja Gore, some kind of spoiling raid. Mogaba wasn't sitting on his hands waiting for the Shadow Masters to come to him. One of the looters said something in a normal voice. Someone told him to shut up. The third man entered his opinion. An argument ensued. The first man didn't want to investigate the uproar. He'd had enough fighting. The others overruled him. The fates were kind. 2 responsible soldiers handed me a life. I lay where I'd fallen, resting for several minutes before I got onto hands and knees and crawled back to the mound of bodies. I found my sword, an ancient and consecrated blade created by Kharki in the younger days of the domination. A storied blade, but no one, not even Croker, had heard its tale. I crawled toward the hummock where, when I'd seen him last, my love had been making his final stand, just him and Mergen and the company standard, trying to stem the rout. It seemed an all-night trek. I found a dead soldier with water in his canteen. I drained it and went on. My strength grew as I crept. By the time I reached the hummock, I could totter along upright. I found nothing there, just dead men. Croker was not among them. The company standard was gone. I felt hollow. Had the Shadow Masters taken him? They would want him badly for crushing their army at Goja, for taking Deja Gore, for killing Storm Shadow. I could not believe they had him. It had taken me too long to find him. No god, no fate could be so cruel. I cried. The night grew quiet. The sortie had withdrawn. The looters would return now. I started moving, stumbled into a dead elephant and almost shrieked, thinking I had walked right into a monster. The elephants had carried all kinds of clutter. Some might be useful. I scrounged a few pounds of dried food, a skin of water, a small jar of poison for arrowheads, a few coins, whatever caught my fancy. Then I walked northward, determined to reach the hills before sunrise. I discarded half my plunder before I got there. I hurried. Enemy patrols would be out looking for important bodies come first light. What could I do now besides survive? I was the last of the Black Company. There was nothing left. Something came into me like a lost memory resurfacing. I could turn back time. I could become what I had been. Trying not to think did not help. I remembered. And the more I remembered, the more angry I became. Anger shaped me till all my thoughts were of revenge. As I started into the hills, I surrendered.
Those monsters who had raped my dreams had written their own decrees of doom. I would do whatever it took to requite them.
Chapter 6 Long Shadow paced a room ablaze with light so brilliant he seemed a dark spirit trapped in the mouth of the sun. He clung to that one crystal-walled, mirrored chamber where no shadow ever formed unless called forth by dire exigency. His fear of shadows was pathological. The chamber was the highest in the tallest tower of the Fortress Overlook, south of Shadowcatch, a city on the southern edge of the world. South of Overlook lay a plateau of glittering stone where isolated pillars stood like forgotten supports for the sky. Though construction had been underway for 17 years, Overlook was incomplete. If Long Shadow did finish it, no force, material, or supernatural would be able to penetrate it. Strange, deadly, terrifying things hungered for him, lusted for freedom from the plane of glittering stone. They were shadow things that could catch up with a man as suddenly as death if he didn't cling to the light. Long Shadow sorcery had shown him the battle at Stormguard, 400 miles north of Shadowcatch. He was pleased. His rivals Moonshadow and Stormshadow had perished. Shadow Spinner had been injured. A touch here, a touch there, subtly, would keep Shadow Spinner weak. But he couldn't be killed. Oh no, not yet. Dangerous forces were at work. Shadow Spinner would have to be the breakwater against which the storm spent its energies. Those mercenaries in Stormguard should be given every chance to sap Spinner's troop strength. He was far too strong now that he had possession of all three northern shadow armies. Subtlety. Subtlety. Each move had to be made with care. Spinner wasn't stupid. He knew who his most dangerous enemy was. If he rid himself of the Taglians and their Free Company leaders, he'd turn on Overlook immediately. And she was out there somewhere, shuffling counters in her own game, not in the ripeness of her power, but deadly as a krite, even so. And there was the woman whose knowledge could be invaluable. Alone, a treasure to be harvested by any adventurer. He needed a cat's paw. He couldn't leave Overlook. The shadows were out there waiting, infinitely patient. He caught a flicker of darkness from the corner of his eye. He squealed and flung himself away. It was a crow, just a damned curious crow fluttering around outside. A cat's paw. There was a power in the swamps north of that miserable Taglios. It festered with grievances real and imagined. It could be seduced. It was the time he lured that power into the game. But how, without leaving Overlook? Something stirred on the plain of glittering stone. The shadows were watching, waiting. They sensed the rising intensity of the game. Chapter 7 I slept in a tangle of brush in a hollow. I'd fled through olive groves and precariously perched hillside paddies, running out of hope, till I stumbled onto that pocket wilderness in a ravine. I was so far gone I'd just crawled in, hoping fate would be kind. A crow's call wakened me from another terrible dream. I opened my eyes. The sun reached in through the brush. It dappled me with spots of light. I'd hoped nobody could see me in there, but that proved a false hope. Someone was moving around the edge of the bushes. I glimpsed one, then another. Damn! The Shadow Master's men. They moved back a little and whispered. I saw them for just a moment, but they seemed troubled, less like hunters than the hunted. Curious. They'd spotted me, I knew. Otherwise, they wouldn't be back there behind me, murmuring too low for me to catch what they said. I couldn't turn toward them without showing them I knew they were there. I didn't want to startle them. They might do something I'd regret. The crow called again. I started turning my head slowly. I froze. There was another player here, a dirty little brown man in a filthy loincloth and tattered turban. He squatted behind the brush. He looked like one of the slaves Croker had freed after our victory at Goja. Did the soldiers know he was there? Did it matter? He wasn't likely to be any help. I was lying on my right side, on my arm. My fingers tingled. My arm was asleep, but the sensation reminded me that my talent had showed signs of freshening since we'd come down past the waste of the world. I hadn't had a chance to test it for weeks. I had to do something, or they would. My sword lay inches from my hand. Golden Hammer. It was a child's spell, an exercise, not a weapon at all, just as a butcher knife isn't. Once it would have been no more work than dropping a rock. Now it was as hard as plain speech for a stroke victim. I tried shaping the spell in my mind. The frustration! The screaming frustration of knowing what to do and being unable to do it. But it clicked, almost the way it had back when. Amazed, pleased, I whispered the words of power, moved my fingers. The muscles remembered. The golden hammer formed in my left hand. I jumped up, flipped it, raised my sword. The glowing hammer flew true. The soldier made a stabbed pig sound and tried to fend it off. It branded its shape on his chest. It was an ecstatic moment. Success with that silly child spell was a major triumph over my handicap. My body wouldn't respond to my will. Too stiff, too battered and bruised for flight, I tried to charge the second soldier. Mostly I stumbled toward him. He gaped, then he ran. I was astonished. I heard a sound like the cough of a tiger behind me. A man came out of nowhere down the ravine. He threw something. The fleeing soldier pitched onto his face and didn't move. I got out of the brush and placed myself so I could watch the killer and the dirty slave who had made the tiger cough. The killer was a huge man. He wore tatters of Taglian legionnaire's garb. The little man came around the brush slowly, considered my victim. He was impressed. He said something apologetic in Taglian, then something excited, rapidly in dialect I found unfamiliar, to the big man who had begun searching his victim. I caught a phrase here and there, all with a cultish sound, but uncertain in this context. I couldn't tell if he was talking about me or praising one of his gods. I heard the foretold and daughter of night and the bride and year of the skulls. I'd heard a daughter of shadow and a year of the skulls before somewhere, in the religious chatter of god-ridden Taglians, but I didn't know their significance. The big man grunted. He wasn't impressed. He just cursed the dead soldier. Kicked him.
Nothing.
The little man fawned.
Your pardon, lady. We've been killing these dogs all morning, trying to raise a stake, but they're poorer than I was as a slave.
You know me?
Oh, yes, mistress. The captain's lady.
He emphasized those last two words, separately and heavily. He bowed three times. Each time his right thumb and forefinger brushed a triangle of black cloth that peeped over the top of his loincloth.
We stood guard while you slept. We should have realized you would need no protection. Forgive us our presumption.
Gods, did he smell. Have you seen anyone else?
Yes, mistress. A few from afar, running most of them.
And the Shadow Master's soldiers?
They search, but with no enthusiasm. Their masters didn't send many. 1,000 like these pigs.
He indicated the man I had dropped. His partner was searching the body.
And 100 horsemen. They must be busy with the city.
Mogaba will give them hell if he can, buying time for others to get clear. The big man said,
Nothing on this toad either, Jamadar.
The little man grunted. Jamadar? It's the Taglian word for captain. The little man had used it earlier, with a different intonation, when he'd called me the captain's lady. I asked, Have you seen the captain? The pair exchanged looks. The little man stared at the ground.
The captain is dead, mistress. He died trying to rally the men to the standard. Ram saw it, an arrow through the heart.
I sat down on the ground. There was nothing to say. I'd known it. I'd seen it happen, too, but I hadn't wanted to believe it. Till that instant, I realized I'd been carrying some small hope that I'd been wrong. Impossible that I could feel such loss and pain. Damn him! Croker was just a man. How did I get so involved? I never meant it to get complicated. This wasn't accomplishing anything. I got up. We lost a battle, but the war goes on. The Shadow Masters will rue the day they decided to bully Taglios. What are your names? The little man said,
I am Narayan, lady.
He grinned. I'd get thoroughly sick of that grin.
A joke on me. It's a Shadar name.
He was Guni, obviously.
Do I look it?
He jerked his head at the other man, who was Shadar. Shadar men tend to be tall and massive and hairy. This one had a head like a ball of kinky wire with eyes peering out.
I was a vegetable peddler till the Shadow Masters came to Gondawar and enslaved everyone who survived the fight for the town.
That would have been before we'd come to Taglios last year, when Swan and Mather had been doing their inept best to stem the first invasion.
My friend is Ram. Ram was a carter in Taglios before he joined the legions.
Why did he call you Jamadar? Narian glanced at Ram, flashed a grin filled with bad teeth, leaned close to me, whispered.
Ram isn't very bright. Strong as an ox he is, and tireless, but slow.
I nodded, but wasn't satisfied. They were two odd birds. Shadar and Guni didn't run together. Shadar considered themselves superior to everyone. Hanging around with a Guni would constitute a defilement of spirit. And Narayan was low-caste Guni. Yet Ram showed him deference. Neither harbored any obviously wicked designs toward me. At the moment, any companion was an improvement on traveling alone. I told them, we ought to get moving. More of them could show up. What is he doing? Ram had a 10-pound rock. He was smashing the leg bones of the man he'd killed. Narayan said,
Ram, that's enough. We're leaving.
Ram looked puzzled. He thought. Then he shrugged and discarded the rock. Narayan didn't explain his actions. He told me,
we saw one fair-sized group this morning, maybe 20 men. Maybe we can catch up.
That would be a start. I realized I was starving. I hadn't eaten since before the battle. I shared out what I'd taken off the dead elephant. It didn't help much. Ram went at it like it was a feast, now completely indifferent to the dead. Narayan grinned.
You see? An ox. Come. Ram, carry her armor.
2 hours later, we found 23 fugitives on a hilltop. They were beaten men, apathetic, so down they didn't care if they got away. Few still had their weapons. I didn't recognize any of them. Not surprising. We'd gone into battle with 40,000. They knew me. Their manners and attitude improved instantly. It pleased me to see hope blossom among them. They rose and lowered their heads respectfully. I could see the city and plain from that hilltop. The Shadow Master's troops were leaving the hills, evidently recalled. Good. We'd have a little time before they picked it up again. I looked at the men more closely. They had accepted me already. Good again. Narayan had begun speaking to them individually. Some seemed frightened of him. Why? What was it? Something was odd about that little man. Ram, build us a fire. I want a lot of smoke. He grunted, drafted 4 men, headed downhill to collect firewood. Narayan trotted over, grinning that grin, followed by a man of amazing width. Most Taglians are lean to the point of emaciation. This one had no fat on him. He was built like a bear.
This is Sindhu, mistress, that I know by reputation.
Sindhu bowed slightly. He looked a humorless sort. Narayan added,
he'll be a good man to help out.
I noted a red cloth triangle at Sindhu's waist. He was Guni. Your help will be appreciated, Sindhu. You two get this bunch sorted out. See what resources we have. Narayan grinned, made a small bow, hustled off with his new friend. I settled cross-legged, separate from the rest, faced the city, closed out the world. The golden hammer had come easily. I'd try again. I opened to what little talent I retained. A peppercorn of fire formed in the bowl of my hands. It was coming back. There is no way to express my pleasure. I concentrated on horses. Half an hour later, a giant black stallion appeared, trotted straight to me. The men were impressed. I was impressed. I hadn't expected success. and that beast was only the first of four to respond. By the time the fourth arrived, so had another 100 men. The hilltop was crowded. I assembled them. "We've lost a battle, men. Some of you have lost heart, too. That's understandable. You weren't raised in a warrior tradition. But this war hasn't been lost, and it won't end while one Shadow Master lives. If you don't have the stomach to stick it out, stay away from me. You'd better go now. I won't let you go later." They exchanged worried glances, but nobody volunteered to travel alone. "We're going to head north. We'll gather food, weapons, and men. We'll train. We're coming back someday. When we do, the Shadow Masters will think the gates of hell have opened." Still nobody deserted. "We march at first light tomorrow. If you're with me then, you're with me forever." I tried to project a certainty that we could terrify the world. When I settled for the night, Ram posted himself nearby. My bodyguard, whether or not I wanted one. I drifted off wondering what had become of four black stallions that had not responded. We had brought eight south. They had been specially bred in the early days of the empire I had abandoned. One could be more valuable than 100 men. I listened to whispers, heard repeats of the terms Narayan had used. They troubled most of the men. I noticed that Ram had his bit of folded cloth, too. His was saffron. He didn't keep it as fastidiously as did Narayan or Sindhu. Three men from two religions, each with a colored cloth. What was the significance? Narayan kept the fire burning. He posted sentries. He imposed a modest discipline. He seemed altogether too organized for a vegetable dealer and former slave. The dark dream, the same as those before, was particularly vivid, though when day came I retained only an impression of a voice calling my name. Unsettling, but I thought it just a trick of my mind. Somewhere, somehow, the knight rewarded Narayan with bounty enough to provide everyone a meager breakfast. I led the mob out at first light. As promised, amidst reports that enemy cavalry were approaching the hills. Discipline was a pleasant surprise, considering. Chapter 8. Dejagore is surrounded by a ring of hills. The plain is lower than the land beyond the hills. Only a dry climate keeps that basin from becoming a lake. Portions of two rivers have been diverted to supply irrigation to the hill farms and water for the city. I kept the band near one of the canals. The Shadow Masters were preoccupied with Dejagore. While they weren't pressing me, I wasn't interested in covering a lot of ground. The future I'd chosen would be no easy conquest. The chance that the enemy might appear encouraged discipline. I hoped to keep that possibility alive till I instilled a few positive habits. "Narayan, I need your advice."
"Mistress?"
"We'll have trouble holding them together once they feel safe." I always talked as though he, Ram, and Sindhu were extensions of myself. They never protested.
"I know, mistress. They want to go home. The adventure is over."
He grinned his grin. I was sick of it already.
"We're trying to convince them they're part of something fated, but they have a lot to unlearn."
That they did. Taglian culture was a religious confusion I hadn't begun to fathom, tangled in caste systems which made no sense. I asked questions, but no one understood. Things were as they were. It was the way they'd always been. I was tempted to declare the mess obsolete, but I didn't have the power. I hadn't had that much power in the North. Some things can't be swept away by dictate. I continued asking questions. If I understood it even a little, I could manipulate the system. "I need a reliable cadre, Narayan. Men I can count on no matter what. I want you to find those men."
"As you say, mistress, so it shall be."
He grinned. That might have been a defensive reflex learned as a slave. Still, the more I saw of Narayan, the more sinister he seemed. Yet why? He was essentially Taglian, low caste. A vegetable vendor with a wife and children and a couple of grandchildren already, last he heard. One of those backbone-of-the-nation sorts. Quiet, who just kept
plugging away at life. Half the time he acted like I was his favorite daughter. What was sinister in that? Ram had more to recommend him as strange. He was 23 and a widower. His marriage had been a love match, rare in Taglios, where marriages are always arranged. His wife had died in childbirth, bearing a stillborn infant. That had left him bitter and depressed. I suspect he joined the legions looking for death. I didn't find out anything about Sindhu. He wouldn't talk until you forced him, and he was creepier than Narayan. Still, he did what he was told, did it well, and asked no questions. I've spent my entire life in the company of sinister characters. For centuries I was wed to the Dominator, the most sinister ever. I could cope with these small men. None of the three were particularly religious, which was curious. Religion pervades Taglios. Every minute of every day, of every life, is part of the religious experience, is ruled by religion and its obligations. I was troubled till I noted a generally reduced level of religious fervor. I picked a man and quizzed him. His answer was elementary.
There ain't no priests here.
That made sense. No society consists entirely of committed true believers. And what these men had seen had been enough to displace the foundations of faith. They'd been pulled out of their safe, familiar ruts and had been thrown hard against facts the traditional answers didn't explain. They'd never be the same. Once they took their experiences home, Taglios wouldn't be the same. The band trebled in size. I had better than 600 followers hailing from all three major religions and a few splinter cults. I had more than 100 former slaves who weren't Taglian at all. They could make good soldiers once they gained some confidence. They had no homes to run to. The band would be their home. The problem with the mix was that every day was a holy day for somebody. If we'd had priests along, there would have been trouble. They began to feel safe. That left them free to indulge old prejudices, to grow lax in discipline, to forget the war and, most irritating, to remember that I was a woman. In law and custom, Taglian women are less favored than cattle. Cattle are less easily replaced. Women who gain status or power do so in the shadows, through men they can influence or manipulate. One more hurdle I'd have to leap, maybe the biggest. I summoned Narayan one morning. We're 100 miles from Dejagore. I wasn't in a good mood. I'd had the dream again. It had left my nerves raw. We're safe for the moment. The confidence of the men in their safety showed as they started their day. I'm going to make some major changes. How many men are reliable? He preened, smug little rat.
1/3. Maybe more if put to the test.
That many? Really? I was surprised. It wasn't evident to me.
You see only the other sort. Some men learned discipline and tolerance in the legions. The slaves came out of bondage filled with hatred. They want revenge. They know no Taglian can lead them against the Shadow Masters. Some even sincerely believe in you for yourself.
Thank you for that, little man. But most will have trouble following me?
Maybe.
That fawning grin, hint of cunning.
We Taglians don't deal well with upheavals in the natural order.
The natural order is that the strong rule and the rest follow. I'm strong, Narayan. I'm like nothing Taglios has ever seen. I haven't yet shown myself to Taglios. I hope Taglios never sees me angry. I'd rather spend my wrath on the Shadow Masters. He bowed several times, suddenly frightened. Our ultimate destination remains Goja. You may pass that word. We'll collect survivors there, winnow them, and rebuild. But I don't intend to get there till we have this force whipped into shape.
Yes, mistress.
Collect whatever weapons are available. Take no arguments. Redistribute them to the men you think reliable. Assign those men to march in the left-hand file. The men to their right are to be religiously mixed. They are to be separated from those they knew before Dejagore.
That may cause trouble.
Good. I want to pinpoint its sources. I'll give it back with interest.
Go on.
Get them disarmed before they understand what's happening. Ram, give him a hand.
But...
I can look out for myself, Ram. His protection was a nuisance. Narayan did move fast. Only a few men had to be separated from their weapons by force. Organized according to my orders, we marched all day, till they were too exhausted to complain. I halted them in the evening and had Narayan form them for review with the reliables in the rear. I donned my armor, mounted one of the black stallions, rode out to review them with little witch fires prancing about me. There wasn't much to those. I hadn't made large strides recapturing my talent. The armor, horse, and fires formed the visible aspect of a character called Lifetaker, whom I had created before the company moved to the main to face the Shadowmasters at Goja. In concert with Croker's Widowmaker, she was supposed to intimidate the enemy by being something larger than life, archetypally deadly. My own men could use a little intimidation now. In a land where sorcery was little more than a rumor, the witchfires could be enough. I passed the formation slowly, studying the soldiers. They understood the situation. I was looking for that which I would not tolerate. The man disinclined to do things my way. I rode past again. After centuries of watching people, it wasn't difficult to spot potential troublemakers. Ram, I pointed out six men. Send them away, with the nothing they had when they joined us. I spoke so my voice carried. Next winnowing, those chosen will taste the lash, and the third winnowing will be a celebration of death. A stir passed through the ranks. They heard the message. The chosen six went sullenly. I shouted at the others. Soldiers, look at the man to your right. Now look at the man to your left. Look at me. You see soldiers, not Guni, not Shadar, not Vedna. Soldiers. We're fighting a war against an implacable and united enemy. In the line of battle, it won't be your gods at your left and your right. It will be men like those standing there now. Serve your gods in your heart if you must, but in this world, in the camp, on the march, on the field of battle, you won't set your gods before me. You'll own no higher master. Till the last Shadow Master falls, no reward or retribution of god or prince will find you more swiftly or surely than mine. I suspected that was maybe pushing too hard too soon, but there wasn't much time to create my cadre. I rode off while they digested it. I dismounted, told Ram, dismiss them, make camp, send me Narayan. I unsaddled my mount, settled on the saddle. A crow landed nearby, cocked its head. Several more circled above. Those black devils were everywhere. You couldn't get away. Croker had been paranoid about them. He'd believed they were following him, spying on him, even talking to him. I thought it was the pressure, but their omnipresence did get irritating. No time for Croker. He was gone. I was walking a sword's edge. Neither tears nor self-pity would bring him back. During the journey north, I'd realized that I'd done more than lose my talent at the Barrowland. I'd given up, so I'd lost my edge during the year-plus since. Croker's fault. His weakness. He'd been too understanding, too tolerant, too willing to give second chances. He'd been too optimistic about people. He couldn't believe there is an essential darkness shadowing the human soul. For all his cynicism about motives, he'd believe that in every evil person there was good trying to surface. I owe my life to his belief, but that doesn't validate it. Narayan came, sneaky as a cat. He gave me his grin. We've gained ground, Narayan. They took that well enough, but we have a long way to go.
The religion problem, mistress?
Some, but that's not the worst hurdle. I've overcome such before. I smiled at his surprise. I see doubts, but you don't know me. You know only what you've heard. A woman who abandoned a throne to follow the captain, eh? But I wasn't the spoiled, heartless child you imagine. Not a brat with a pinch of talent who fell heir to some petty crown she didn't want. Not a dunce who ran off with the first adventurer who'd have her.
Little is known except that you were the captain's lady, he admitted. Some think, as you suggest, Your companion scarcely hinted at your antecedents. I think you're much more, but how much more? I dare not guess.
I'll give you a hint. I was amused. For all Narayan seemed to want me to be something untraditional, he was startled whenever I didn't behave like a Taglian woman. Sit, Narayan. It's time you understood where you're placing your bets. He looked me askance, but settled. The crow watched him, his fingers teased at that fold of black cloth. Narayan, the throne I gave up was the seat of an empire so broad you couldn't have walked it east to west in a year. It spanned 2,000 miles from north to south. I built it from a beginning as humble as this. I started before your grandfather's grandfather was born, and it wasn't the first empire I created. He grinned uneasily. He thought I was lying. Narayan, the Shadow Masters were my slaves, powerful as they are. They disappeared during a great battle 20 years ago. I believed them dead till we unmasked the one we killed in Dejagore. I'm weakened now. 2 years ago there was a great battle in the northernmost region of my empire. The captain and I put down awakening evil left over from the first empire I created. To succeed, to prevent that evil from breaking loose, I had to allow my powers to be neutralized. Now I'm winning them back, slowly and painfully. Narayan couldn't believe. He was the son of his culture. I was a woman. But he wanted to believe. He said,
"But you're so young."
In some ways, I never loved before the captain. This shell is a mask, Narayan. I entered this world before the Black Company passed this way the first time. I'm old, Narayan. Old and wicked. I've done things no one would believe. I know evil, intrigue, and war like they're my children. I nurtured them for centuries. Even as the captain's lover, I was more than a paramour. I was the lieutenant, his chief of staff. I'm the captain now, Narayan. While I survive, the company survives. And goes on. And finds new life. I'm going to rebuild, Narayan. It may wear another name for a while, but behind the domino, it will be the Black Company. And it will be the instrument of my will. Narayan grinned that grin.
You may be her, indeed.
I may be who?
Soon, mistress. Soon. It's not yet time. Suffice it to say that not everyone greeted the return of the Black Company with despair.
His eyes went shifty. Say that, then. I decided not to press him. I needed him pliable. For the moment, we're building an army. We're woefully beggared of an army's most precious resource, veteran sergeants. We have no one who can teach. Tonight, before they eat, sort the men by religion. Organize them in squads of 10, 3 from each cult, plus 1 non-Taglian. Assign each squad a permanent place in the camp and the order of march. I want no intercourse between squads till each can elect a leader and his second. They'd better work out how to get along. They'll be stuck in those squads. Another risk. The men were not in the best temper. But they were isolated from the priesthoods and culture, which reinforced their prejudices. Their priests had done their thinking for them all their lives. Out here they had nobody but me to tell them what to do. I won't approach Goja before the squads pick leaders. Fighting amongst squad members should be punished. Set up whipping posts before you make the assignments. Send the squads to supper as you form them. Learning to cook together will help. I waved him away. He rose.
If they can eat together, they can do anything together, mistress.
I know. Each cult sustained an absurd tangle of dietary laws. Thus, this approach. It should undermine prejudice at its most basic level. These men would not rid themselves of ingrained hatred, but would set it aside around those with whom they served. It's easier to hate those you don't know than those you do. When you march with someone and have to trust him with your life, it's hard to keep hating irrationally. I tried to keep the band preoccupied with training. Those who had been through it with the hastily raised legions helped, mainly by getting the others to march in straight lines. Sometimes I despaired. There was just so much I could do. There was only one of me. I needed a firm power base before I dared the political lists. Fugitives joined us. Some went away again. Some didn't survive the disciplinary demands. The rest strove to become soldiers. I was free with punishments and freer with rewards. I tried to nurture pride and, subtly, the conviction that they were better men than any who didn't belong to the band, the conviction that they could trust no one who wasn't of the band. I didn't spare myself. I slept so little I had no time to dream, or didn't remember that I'd dreamed. Every free moment I spent nagging my talent, I'd need it soon. It was coming back slowly. Too slowly. It was like having to learn to walk again after a prolonged illness. Chapter 9. Though I wasn't trying to move quickly, I outdistanced most of the survivors. For loners and small groups, foraging outweighed speed. Once I slowed to avoid reaching Goja, though more and more caught up. Not many decided to enlist. Already the band was recognizably alien. It scared outsiders. I guessed maybe 10,000 men had escaped the debacle. How many would survive to reach Goja? If Taglios was fortunate, maybe half. The land had turned hostile. 40 miles from Goja and the main, just inside territory historically Taglian, I ordered a real camp built with a surrounding ditch. I chose a meadow on the north bank of a clean brook. The south bank was forested. The site was pleasant. I planned to stay, rest, train, till my foragers exhausted the countryside. For days, incoming fugitives had reported enemy light cavalry hunting behind them. An hour after we began making camp, I got a report of smoke south of the wood. I walked the mile to the far side, saw a cloud rising from a village 6 miles down the road. They were that close. Trouble? It had to be considered. An opportunity? Unlikely at this stage. Narayan came running through the dusk.
"Mistress, the Shadow Master's men, they're making camp on the south side of the woods. They'll catch us tomorrow."
His optimism had deserted him. I thought about that. Do the men know?
The news is spreading.
Damn. All right. Station reliable men along the ditch. Kill anybody who tries to leave. Put Ram in charge, then come back.
Yes, mistress.
Narayan scampered off. At times he seemed a mouse. He returned.
They're grumbling.
Let them, as long as they don't run. Do the Shadow Master's men know we're this close? Narayan shrugged.
I want to know.
Put out a picket line a quarter mile into the wood. 20 good men. They're not to interfere with scouts coming north, but they're to ambush them headed back. They wouldn't be expecting trouble going away. Use men who aren't good for anything else to raise an embankment along the creek. Drive stakes into its face. Sharpen them. Find vines. Sink them in the water. There's no room to maneuver on the south bank. They'll have to come straight at us. Hard. Once you've got that started, come back. Best get everybody busy and distract them from their fears. I snapped. Narayan, wait. Find out if any of the men can handle horses. Other than my mounts, there were just a half a dozen animals with the band, all strays we'd captured. I'd had to teach Ram to care for mine. Riding amongst Taglians was restricted to high-caste Guni and rich Shadar. Bullock and buffalo were the native work animals. It was the 10th hour when Narayan returned. In the interim, I prowled. I was pleased. I saw no panic, no outright terror, just a healthy ration of fear tempered by the certainty that chances of surviving were better here than on the run. They feared my displeasure more than they feared an enemy not yet seen. Perfect. I made a suggestion about the angle of